listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Coming up, if you've ever made your way down the tight aisles on an airplane to use the bathroom, you know that both the walkway and the lavatory are cramped and small. We talk with a reporter about the obstacles in travel for those with disabilities and a few ways technology is making things easier for some of the time. First, it's time for our weekly review of state news, and with the primary just a little over 3 weeks away, we're going to focus on the run for governor. Monday was the deadline for mid-year fundraising reports, and on Wednesday, the Marquette Law School released their latest poll, which included a look at how gubernatorial hopefuls are faring with gaining support from voters. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capital Bureau Chief, and he's with us in the studio to give us the latest. Sean, thanks for coming in.
Hi, Judith.
So let's start with those financial reports that candidates had to file by Monday. What information is included in them?
What you see in those reports is how much money people donated to them or committees donated to them or they donated to themselves between January 1st and June 30th of this year. So it's a snapshot of how these campaigns were operating, all eight of them now on the Democratic side. And then you've got the governor, of course, who's kind of in a different world there on the Republican side, how they were operating in the first half of this year, who they're reaching out to, who's supporting them.
And as you said, there are eight Democrats still in the race, and then Governor Walker, and he does have a primary challenger. Let's start with the Dems. Who came out on top for total money raised in those 6 months?
So I'd say, first of all, it kind of depends on what you look at. But if you look at just sheer dollars, Kelderoy's had the best, you know, 6 months of 2016. And she raised about $668,000, she had $668,000 cash on hand and raised about that much, too. So she was first, followed by, in terms of cash on hand, Matt Flynn, Malin Mitchell, and Tony Evers. Those were the candidates that raised in six-figure sums. Everybody else was below six-figure sums. So you kind of have, again, strictly in campaign fundraising, you've got kind of two tiers that developed in terms of who has money and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm. And for those that were in that kind of second tier, how much under six figures were they?
Well, in some cases, you know, way below. So you got, Josh Paid was, in his initial finance report, was actually running a deficit. He filed an amended report, so he's slightly above zero. Kathleen Vineout had just about $21,000 cash to, you know, as of June 30th. So, you know, just to put that in some context, you're talking about that's how much money these campaigns have for that final push to the August 14th primary. That's why that cash on hand figure is so relevant right now, is it's going to be a shortened campaign at this point. Mm-hmm. Who's going to be able to do it? The other candidates that were down there, Paul Soglin had about $58,000. Mike McCabe had $68,000. McCabe also gave some money to himself.
Mm-hmm. And so, as you said, you know, we're coming up on this primary. What do candidates generally use their cash on hand for as in the, you know, final weeks leading up to that primary?
Some of them are going to use it for ads. You've already got three candidates now who have come out and put some TV ads up there. Tony Evers, Kelderoy's, Matt Flynn. All three of those candidates, by the way, have given some of their own money to their campaign. So that's part of the reason they're able to afford this stuff. Kelderoy's gave about $350,000 to herself. Matt Flynn, $140,000. Tony Evers, $100,000. That's a lot of money for a person to give their own campaign, right?
And is it giving or is it loaning?
It's loaning in some cases.
Okay.
In these cases, they are loans. And so if they were to win the nomination, they would be able to fundraise and they would be able to pay down
themselves.
Those personal loans. If they don't win, it's a lot harder to get people to pay off your campaign debt.
I think we saw that with Governor Walker. It wasn't to pay off a debt, but he was trying to pay off campaign debt, not a loan, after he left the presidential election.
Yeah, in his case, it wasn't personal money that he'd put in, but he had a debt in his federal campaign that he spent a lot of time paying down. In this case, it's personal money that they put in there. And it is a lot of money for a person, but it doesn't buy a lot on TV. You're not talking about a multi-million dollar campaign for any of these people. They are in the hundreds of thousands. And so it's an open question as to how much a TV ad is going to get noticed in that size of an ad buy in the middle of summer.
Hmm. And on the Republican side, as we said, Governor Walker is being challenged by Robert Meyer. What did Meyer report for fundraising?
A bit of a fundraising gap on the Republican side. Robert Meyer had $114 that he gave to himself. Governor Walker had $5.9 million in the bank and had raised $5.5 million in the first 6 months of 2018.
We're talking with Sean Johnson right now. He's WPR's Capital Bureau Chief. We're talking about the fundraising reports, that the financial reports that candidates for governor had to file this week. And Sean, this week we also saw the latest Marquette Law School poll being released. And not surprisingly, there were quite a few questions that related to the primary coming up. From looking at the Marquette Law School poll results, do voters know who they're going to vote for on August 14th for governor?
According to the Marquette poll, a lot of them do not. I mean, the leading vote getter in the Democratic primary is still undecided, if you want to break it down that way. There were 38% of voters who said they weren't sure who they're going to vote for. These are Democratic primary voters, self-identified, who said they don't know who they're going to vote for in the race for governor. It was a decent poll, though, for Tony Evers, who polled at 31%. Now, again, that's there are enough undecided voters to overcome his margin, and the election's a month away. It's not like he won it already. Mm-hmm. But if you look at where Evers is at, he's been climbing in that poll, and you don't see, at least in the polls, like a clear second place challenger to kind of challenge him, and they don't have much time.
Am I remembering correctly, Sean, that he was the only one that was in double digits?
Yeah, the second place finisher in the Marquette poll, it was a tie between Malin Mitchell and Kathleen Beinhout. They had 6% each. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a gap to overcome, obviously. The Senate race is a little tighter. There's a Republican Senate race between Kevin Nicholson, Leah Vukmir, and Vukmir was up on Nicholson 34% to 32%. Again, though, 30% undecided in that race. So in the middle of summer, people are thinking about other things.
Well, and going back to those undecideds on the Dem side for governor, it maybe it falls within the margin of error, but I think it was the undecided was actually a couple percentage points higher than it was in the last market poll.
Yeah, that was weird. And, you know, the pollster Charles Franklin cautioned us all, don't make too much of that. You know, like 4% is not, with the margin of error in this sample, is not enough to get excited about. But, of course, you're going to look at it and not, you know, see that line is not going the other way, that there's not more people making up their minds, at least in that result, that there are more people who don't know.
Do you see movement? I mean, there are the numbers in the poll and you know, other indicators like fundraising, but do you see any of the Dems doing a better job than the others in kind of boosting their name recognition and getting in front of the voters in a way that, I mean, they have to differentiate themselves from seven other Dems, let alone from Governor Walker?
I think ads are one way to do that. You know, having that money gives you a chance at least to come out and say to more people, I'm the person for you. There is a little bit of a juxtaposition, between the way that the race is perceived, like in Democratic circles, for example, and what you see borne out in these poll numbers. For example, Kelder Royce won the straw poll at the state Democratic convention, won some other smaller straw polls at county conventions, has gotten some big endorsements from, you know, like Emily's List, which endorses female candidates nationwide, has a lot of things that she would be able to point to and say, I have momentum. But in the, you know, a larger electorate, it's not showing up in those Marquette polls. And maybe, you know, somebody like Royce or Mitchell or Flynn, who have the resources to put behind it, maybe that's the kind of thing that they can put together as more people start paying attention to. But so far, it's not.
Mm-hmm. I should say that we have invited all of the candidates for governor, both Democratic and Republican, because they have contested primaries, to come on Central Time in the 2 weeks prior to the primary. So that's another way that people can get their message out to the voters. Hopefully they will all accept. So as we said, you know, it's summer. Maybe not the greatest time for people to be focusing on politics, but the governor's race is a pretty high stakes race. And Governor Walker has been, you know, a fairly polarizing person. Would you expect there to be more excitement or something on the Democratic side?
The rest of the world doesn't always operate on your expectations when you follow this stuff day in, day out. You know, an eight-person primary on the Democratic side may not be somebody's idea of fun, right? it's a big race, and I think anytime you get closer to the general election, that intensity will increase. You know, you may not feel it out there, see it out there among Republicans or among Democrats in these Senate or these governor's races right now, but as we approach the general election, it's just like it's a rule of nature that you know, people will become more intensely focused on these races. I don't think that'd be any different this year.
And here we are a little over 3 weeks out from the primary. Sean, do you expect anyone to drop out before we get to primary day?
That is a good question. I mean, they haven't done it at this point. And so you can kind of go through the list and say, well, if they haven't done it by now, why would they? Mm-hmm. Kind of. I mean, and I think for me, all of those candidates sort of check that off. You know, you look at Kathleen Vinehouse, she doesn't have any money really to speak of. And she's been asked by people, hey, are you going to get out of the race? But she's polling at second place for what mm-hmm. it's worth in the Marquette poll. And she's already announced she's not going to run for her state Senate race. So she's got nothing to lose. Why would she mm-hmm. at this point? Unless she had a front runner that she really wanted to throw her support behind. So, you know, personally, I look at all the names and I think kind of, why would they at this mm-hmm. point?
Might as well stick it out.
Right.
Well, before we wrap up, Sean, we got news today that Mike Ellis passed away. He served the Neenah area in the state Senate for over 30 years, was president of the Senate for the last 4 years of his career. What kind of legacy is he leaving behind in Wisconsin politics?
Oh, Mike Ellis had a very big personality in the Capitol. I mean, he was known for being a booming speaker. He knew the way state government worked better than anybody, and he really liked to use that. I sort of perceived him as a friendly adversary to Scott Fitzgerald, the majority leader, from time to time. You know, he would kind of be a thorn in leadership's side because he knew so much and because he liked to mix it up. But Fitzgerald was the first person to come out with a statement today announcing the passing of Mike Ellis. And Fitzgerald said, quote, "Everything I learned about leadership and politics, I learned from Senator Ellis." Fitzgerald called him a friend and a mentor. Democrats also praising Ellis. This is Democratic Party Chair Martha Lanning. She said, quote, "Wisconsin's legislature has seen many greats, but the passing of Mike Ellis is a terrible loss." So you're seeing a lot of that from people who got to know him over his 44-year career.
Well, Sean, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. He joined us to take a look at how candidates for governor are doing financially and with getting their message out to likely voters.